There is a svar note in the end of the last week's Sedra on the pasuk v'noach motza chein be'enei Hashem. The svar note explains basically the following. Chein connotes something for free. You get something bechinam that you don't deserve by the grace of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What did Noach get that he got bechein, bechinam? He got the fact that his family was saved from the Mabul. And the Sfarno explains that somebody who influences other people has the merit that other people can be saved in his merit. But somebody who does not influence other people, only is a tzaddik for himself, doesn't have the merit that other people should be saved in his merit. He has the merit that he should be saved from a catastrophe or whatever. And even though, and Noach, unlike Avram Avinu, who went out and influenced others and brought them to a belief in God, Noach didn't do that. And therefore, the fact that Noach's family were saved was a present to Noach, something he didn't deserve. Now, on the surface, if that's all the Sfarno said, we would say that the Sfarno is echoing the famous Chassidish Vort on Noach, comparing him to Avram Avinu, that Noach was what they call a tzaddik in pelts. Tzaddik in pelts means a tzaddik in a fur coat, based on the following analogy. If it's cold in a room, you can warm yourself up in one of two ways. You can build a fire, or you can put on a fur coat. What's the difference between them? The fire warms other people too. The fur coat only warms you. There are tzaddikim, goes the vort, that are tzaddikim in pelts. They put on a fur coat. They're not concerned about warming up others and influencing others. They take care of themselves. And then there are tzaddikim who build fires and take care of themselves and others at the same time. Now, I don't understand that vort, because how could a person be a tzaddik and not care about other people? Secondly, it can't be that that's what the Sfarno means about Noah. Because the Gemara says in Sanhedrin that one of the reasons why Noach built the Teva altogether was to afford him the ability to rebuke his generation. They weren't people that you go out in the street and say the world's coming to an end and they would take it seriously. They would just mock him and whatever. So by building the Teva, Noach gave them an incentive to ask what's going on. It obviously, you believe that something's going to happen. This is a little big for your bathtub. So why are you building this gigantic boat in your backyard? And Noah tells them that God told me there's going to be a flood. And he must have believed it, because he wouldn't have spent 120 years building this boat. So people had to take him somewhat seriously. It gave him a point of conversation, point of debate with these people, and now maybe he could influence them. So for 120 years, Noach built the Teva and rebuked his generation. So what kind of tzaddik and pelts is he? What kind of person is only concerned about himself? He did rebuke his generation. Gemara clearly says it. In fact, I'd like to use this as an answer to explain the following Rashi. Rashi says that all the people of Noah's generation were having children already in their 50s, 60s. And Noah didn't have children till he was 500 years old. Why? Says Rashi, so he shouldn't have children who at the time of the flood were already bar mitzvah in the age that they were bar mitzvah before the flood. Since they lived so long, they did not become mature to be able to be considered responsible from the heavenly standpoint till they were 100 years old. So not one of Noah's children was 100, wasn't liable on their own till before the flood came. What difference did it make? So Rashi says, because if they would be Rishoyim, they would have their own judgment, they wouldn't be saved in their father's merit, and therefore they would have been killed. It would have been a terrible, terrible blow to Noach. And if they would have been tzaddikim, it would have been a tremendous bother to build all those extra tevos. Now, I understand if they be rishoyim, why they would be destroyed. But if they be tzaddikim, would they be too big to go into Noach's teva? What difference would it make if they were 100 or less than 100 in the fact that they could go into Noach's teva? They went in with their wives anyway. What difference would it make if they were tzaddikim or not? Now, based on what I told you, the purpose of building the teva was not to save Noach. God could have saved him by bringing him, putting him up and suspending him in midair, right, or giving him scuba diving equipment. There are plenty of ways that God could have devised to save Noach. So why did he make him build this teva? Anyway, it was a miracle that all the animals fit into this teva. You're doing miracles already, do a bigger miracle. Don't make them work for 120 years. The answer is the building of the teva had nothing to do with saving Noach. It was in order that he should fulfill his requirement to rebuke the generation. And the only way he can do that was by building a teva and having some kind of confrontation with them. Had his sons been tzaddikim, they would have had that responsibility themselves. They couldn't have been yotzei with Noach's teva. They'd have to build their own teva. In any case, the Svarno knew that Gemara, and therefore he continues. And he says, even though Noach rebuked his generation and told them of the things that they were doing that were socially unacceptable, he didn't teach them lo das es Hashem v'lo leches bidrachav. He didn't teach them to know God and to walk in His ways. That had he taught them that, they would have been Talmidei Chachamim. Listen to this. And a Talmid Chacham definitely does tshuva. They surely would have done tshuva. Because he didn't teach them that, they didn't do tshuva, Noach was not successful in influencing them, and that's why Noach did not deserve to have his family saved in his merit. He was given it as a present. That's the Svarna. Very difficult Svarna. First of all, let's understand why somebody who influences other people deserves to have other people saved in his merit, and somebody who doesn't deserve that. Very simple. People are wicked, and they deserve to be punished. But there's somebody around who is interested in influencing them, is capable of influencing them. So why punish them and destroy them? Give them the chance that maybe this person will influence them and make them do tshuva. Wait and see. But if there's nobody around that conceivably is going to influence them, then the chances of them doing tshuva, of being influenced, are very nil. So therefore go ahead with the punishment. There's nothing to wait for. On the other hand, so that's why somebody who is interested and capable of influencing other people, right, in his merit will save these other people because there's hope for them, because of you. But if you're not interested or you're not capable, so then there's no hope for them, so then destroy them. Okay. What does the Svarno mean, though? Noach gave them rebuke. He rebuked them. He told them, you're a bunch of ganodim. You're a bunch of megalei arayos. He gave them musar for what they were doing wrong. But he didn't teach them to know God and walk in His ways. L'das es Hashem v'lo leches bidrachav. Had he taught them that, they surely would have been done tshuva. He would have been successful. And because he wasn't successful, and he didn't have the potential to be successful, therefore his family should not have been saved in his merit, but they were as a present. That's the Svarno. So what's the Svarno talking about? What does he mean? The Rambam in Hilchos Deos explains that having the proper character traits is called Derech Hashem. That is the way of God. Because we have a mitzvah of a halachta bidrachav, to walk, to emulate God's ways, His character traits, His midos. Mahu rachum, God is merciful, you should be merciful. God is gracious, you be gracious, and so on. And that, v'halachta bidrachav, is called Derech Hashem. So when the Svarno says that Noach did not teach his generation, l'das es Hashem, to know God, meaning to know His ways, His midos, and l'leches bidrachav, means to walk in the ways of God, to emulate God in their character traits, in their midos. What did Noach not teach them? Midos. Had he taught them midos, they would have been Talmidei Chachamim. Why? The Rambam also says, a Talmud Chacham is a person, right? Chachma, Deos, Das. A Talmud Chacham is someone who knows how to act and follow and emulate God's midos. It all fits together. It's all the same thing. The only question now is, what are we talking about over here? Noach rebuked them for the terrible things they did. He didn't teach them midos. Because of that, he was not successful. Why? What does midos have to do with rebuking them for stealing and immorality and murder and all the other things that they did? Rebuke them for what they did wrong. What's this idea that he wasn't successful because he didn't teach them lo dasas Hashem lo leches bedrachav? We know at least what that means. How does it fit in? There is a chazal on the pasuk Derech Eitz Hachayim. God put angels of destruction to guard the way that leads to the Eitz Hachayim. So the Medrash comments, the Eitz Hachayim is the Torah. Eitz Chayim hi l'machzikim bo. What is Derech Eitz Hachayim? The Derech to Eitz Hachayim is Derech Eretz. Derech Eretz means midos tovos, good character traits, character building. That is the Derech that leads to Torah. And there is no other Derech. The way to reach Torah is through Derech Eretz. As it says in Pirkei Avos, im ein Derech Eretz, ein Torah. If there's no Derech Eretz, then there can't be Torah. And even though it also says, im ein Torah, ein Derech Eretz, the Mefarshim explain, there are two levels of Derech Eretz. There are the basic character traits of a human being who is created in God's image, and if you don't have those basic character traits, you'll never have Torah. Then there are more sublime character traits that you can acquire by learning Torah. If you don't have Torah, you can't have those more sublime character traits. If you don't have the basic character traits, you'll never have Torah. Now on that Mishnah, the Rabbeinu Yonah makes the following statement. Person should not think that he will learn Torah in the hope that then he will perfect his character. Ki lo yishkon ha-Torah la-olam b'misha ein bo midos tovos. The Torah cannot reside forever by a person who does not have good character traits. Now that would seem to imply that it's an impossibility. Someone without good character traits cannot have Torah. It's impossible. The Torah will not reside by such a person. Impossible. Never. Never be. I don't know, but unfortunately there are people in this world that do not have good character traits. And they have a lot of Torah. So how could it be that the Rabbeinu Yonah should say categorically, the Torah will never reside or can never reside lo yishkon haTorah la'olam b'mishein bo mi. He should have said there's exceptions to the rule. It most of the time will not be with people with bad midos. But it's possible the Torah should be by people with bad midos, because there are plenty of people with bad midos that know Torah. So what does that mean? File that away for a second. Let me tell you something else. And we'll explain both of them, and then we'll see what the Rabbeinu Yonah meant, and then we'll see what Noach was missing. The Reb Simcha Zissel from Kelim, Talmid of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, made the following statement. He said that Darwin only formulated the theory of evolution that man descended from the ape and from other animals because he never saw a real human being. Had he ever seen a real human being like my Rebbe, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, he never would have formulated such a theory. Now it's cute, sounds nice, right? But it doesn't seem to be real or be true to the facts of the situation. Darwin was not some kind of caveman right, who jumped from tree to tree with vines, you know, like Tarzan, while he was munching on a turkey leg, and his friends were all a bunch of primitive animals. Darwin was an extremely refined person whose circle of friends were extremely refined, and therefore, for Simcha Zissel to say that Darwin never saw a real human being seems to be detached from reality. So what does he mean? What did Simcha Zissel mean when he said that Darwin formulated his theory based on the fact that he only saw two-legged animals walking around next to him? Had he seen a real human being, he would have said something different. So let me tell you what I think Reb Simcha Zissel meant, and it's exactly in what he said. Not a word different. And with all of Darwin's refined friends. There is a story that's told about the Rambam, Reb Yonason Apshitz, and the Maral, I think, the third one, which has me believe that it never really happened to any of them. But it's a marshal, it's a nice story. Whether it happened or not is irrelevant. But a lot of these stories are told about many Gedolim, right, which probably means that it probably never happened to any of them. And somebody tacked it on to somebody. It does make a difference. What was the story? I'll tell you, I saw it in the name of the Rambam, so we'll use it with the Rambam. The Rambam had a debate with a philosopher. The philosopher maintained that you could train an animal to go against its instincts. You could totally change the instinctive behavior of an animal. And the Rambam said it's impossible. Animals are created with certain instincts and they can't change. It's interesting, the Maral says that that's an animal, behema. Behema is boma, whatever there is. Can't change it. That's an animal is born, never changes. A shor ben yomo is called a shor. It's born ashore, it dies ashore, it never changes. Okay. So the philosopher said he will prove to the Rambam that he can train animals to go against their instincts. Months later, he calls the Rambam, invites him to a banquet, where he will prove to the Rambam that he's been successful in training animals to go against their instincts. The Rambam comes with a little box. The philosopher comes with a little box. They both sit at the head table. And the philosopher takes a bell out of his box. He rings the bell. And out of the kitchen come 10 cats standing on their hind legs, perfectly erect, dressed like waiters and waitresses, with a towel over one arm and a tray perfectly balanced in the other arm. And they serve the entree. The philosopher turns to the Rambam and he says, I think I've proven my point. These cats instinctively walk on all fours. I've taught them to walk like human beings on two legs. They don't have the balance of balancing trays or whatever, and I've taught them to balance the trays. And then the cats curtsy and go back into the kitchen. So you've seen that I've totally train these animals to go against their instincts. The Rambam says, looks interesting, but it's a long meal. Let's wait and see what happens. Philosopher rings his bell. They come, take off the plates from the entree, serve the main course. Beautiful. Comes time for dessert. The philosopher takes out his box, takes out the bell, rings the bell. Cats come out of the kitchen to serve dessert. At this point, the Rambam opens his little box, puts it on the floor. Within minutes, there's pandemonium in the hall. The trays are being thrown all over. All the dessert dishes are being broken. And the cats are down on all four, chasing the mice that the Rambam just let loose. The Rambam turns to the philosopher, and he says, you can train a cat to think he's a waiter from today till doomsday. But let the first mouse go by, and the cat remembers he's a cat and not a waiter. You can't change the instincts of an animal. The animal instinctively chases mice. That's what's going to happen. And that's what happened. That is an animal. What's the difference between an animal and a human being? An animal, like we said, is behema, bo-ma. Whatever it is, it is. It is programmed. It has a instinct. That's it. Adam in gematria is ma, because a person always changes. A person has free choice. A person also is born with instincts, but a person has the ability to suppress, control, and change his instincts. That's the difference between a human being and an animal. In fact, some say that that's what it means. Umosar ha'adam in abehema ayin. The benefit of a human being over an animal is ayin. No. Human beings can say no. A cow sees something that looks interesting to eat, doesn't think about if it's going to get a stomach ache later on, if it's better to eat something else because leave room for something better. It has the instinct, the desire, it eats. Finished. Human beings have the ability to say no, because this is not healthy for me. This is going to give me a stomach ache. I'd rather leave room for something more important. People can suppress and control their instincts. Animals can. That's the difference between an animal and a human being. But that is only if a person works on his character. If you don't work on your character, then you remain like an animal. Then, Taka, you function according to instinct. And you can be trained like a cat to function in a very respectable way. But if you haven't worked on your midos, where you're in control, then basically, you're basically like an animal. No different. Let me give you two examples of that. Rav Naiman in Darche HaMusar says that that was a problem with Ephron Hachiti. Ephron offers Avram Avinu Ma'oras HaMachpelah for free, as a beautiful gesture of respect to Avram, respect to Sari Menu. In the end, he ends up overcharging him, right, cheating him tremendously for that same thing. What happened to Ephraim? Well, he was a con man. He didn't mean it in the beginning. Says Rav Naiman, no, Ephraim meant it. He meant that he wanted to give it for free. So what happened? He was a very fine person. But everybody has the mouse that can bring them on all fours. If you haven't worked on your midos, then basically you're like an animal. You have your instincts, and if you're not in control of them, let the first mouse come by, and you remember you're not a cat. You're not a waiter. You're a cat. You can train a cat too, up until the first mouse goes by. A human being also can act very refined till the first mouse goes by, and the mouse takes on different forms for different people. For Ephron, the mouse was a shekel, was a dollar, was money. As long as Avram didn't mention to him payment, money, Ephron was benevolent, willing to give away Ma'oras HaMachpelah. The first mention of money was like the mouse, got him all down on all four. Now he can't control himself. He has to chase the money. So he ended up cheating him. And we're all, to a certain degree, like that. If you have not worked on your midos, if you haven't worked on your midos, says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, we normally think that a ganav is somebody who's stolen. That's a thief. And somebody who hasn't stolen is not a thief. That's not really accurate. Because imagine if you would be in this situation. Okay, you've never stolen anything in your life. You're in the following situation. Your children are starving. You have no conceivable way of earning any money. And you need, we're not talking about pikuach nefesh now. Your children are hungry, and they all they can eat is bread and water, and your heart goes out to them. You're in a room with a multimillionaire who is a little senile, and he leaves $10,000 on the table, okay, by accident. Forgot it. It's a small change for the day. It'll make no dent in him at all. He'll never remember even that he left it there. It's his money. It wasn't me, Ayish on it. Halachically, it's his. He won't make a difference to him. If I take it, no one will ever know. No one. The guy will never remember. Doesn't make a difference, won't hurt him. In that situation, if you would take that money, you're a ganav. You're a thief. And you're a thief now too. The only thing that prevents you from stealing is circumstance. The only difference between you and the other thief is the circumstances that presented themselves that made it conducive for that person to steal presented themselves. And the conditions that would make it conducive to you to steal have not yet presented themselves. So what separates you between you and the thief? Circumstance. So you're basically a thief. You're only not a thief if there's no circumstance in the world that you would steal. Then you're not a thief. The only time you could do that is if you worked on your mitzvos. But if you didn't work on them, you just relied on the fact that you have certain behavior that is respectable and proper, then let the first mouse go by and you're not going to be behaving properly anymore because you're going to be on all four following the mouse. Only if you're in total control, you've worked on your midos, you know when to, a mido means a measure. You know when to use it, when not to use it, when to suppress it. That's called measures. You know how to measure it out. Then you're in control. Then you're a human being. Once wanted to answer another question with that. The Ran, Rabbeinu Nissim, in his drushes, explains why Avraham Avinu was so concerned that Eliezer did not want a wife, that he sent Eliezer to get a wife from his family and not from the Canaanim. I mean, his family was like, you know, these really great people, Lavan, Besuel, right? I'm sure he could have found a girl amongst the Canaanim that also was as good as Rivka. I mean, the family was no great sheikhs. So why did Avram prefer to find a girl amongst his family and not amongst the Canaanim? Says the Ran, Avraham Avinu knew his family were basically idol worshippers, people who were wicked because of their intellect. Intellectually, they believed in things that weren't true. And that was their wickedness. The Canaanim were not only wicked intellectually. They were wicked midos-wise. Their character traits were totally evil. And therefore, Avram said like this, when it comes to intellectual sins, you can retrain somebody to think differently. You can teach them a new set of values. But when it comes to character traits are hereditary. If the character traits are negative, they'll be passed on to the next generation. And it could be that somebody will resist going with those negative character traits, but it may come out in a further generation. So he would rather go to his family where it was a matter of intellectual kind of sin, that's not hereditary. Whereas bad midos are hereditary. Okay, very nice, but I don't know, from the Torah that I see, Avraham Avinu's family were not just people who had bad intellect. They were love and harami. Besuel or harami. They were people with the worst midos you can imagine. So, what's the difference? What's the Ram talking about? As if to say, no, Avraham's family didn't have bad midos. What would you call it? Who's the Torah I see is not what the Ram saw. What I say is the following. There are bad midos and there are no midos. Avraham Avinu's family didn't have bad midos. They just never worked on their midos. So whatever came naturally or because of their environment, they did. That's why the Torah says constantly, Lavan hu arami mipadan aram, says the Kli Yoker. That Lavan had bad character traits because he was influenced by the people around him. They also were tricksters and charlatans. So he was also a trickster and a charlatan, a cheat. But it's not because he worked on his midos and he had bad midos. The Canaanim, on the other hand, wasn't just a matter that they weren't in control of their midos, so they did things bad. They had bad character. They worked on their character. They were in control. Control for the negative. How do I know that? Because the Gemara says the Canaanim, no, to be a cheat, you don't have to work on it. You just have to not act in a proper way. But to do what the Canaanim did, you had to work at it. What did they do? Some of the things they did was they took their children and sacrificed them to their gods for success. They could take any number of their children and roast them slowly over a barbecue right? Not kill them and then burn them. Roast them slowly and that way kill them. You can't just be somebody that doesn't have good midos. You have to be somebody who really worked on this to be able to be so cruel. They used to feed their parents to dogs when they got old and a burden. You can't do that if you just don't have good midos. You have to really work at that. Okay? So the Kenanim acquired bad midos. That could pass on from generation to generation. No midos doesn't pass on anything. It's not something to pass on. It's just the absence, the lack of good midos. So you have to really work at it. There's a famous story. I don't know how famous it is, but now it'll be famous to you. I hesitate saying it out sneers reasons, but it brings out the points I'm going to say it. I would not maybe not say it somewhere else, but here I think we could say it. I got to remember who it was. It was George Bernard Shaw. Was known to be a very interesting person. So he once accosted a very noble lady, English lady, at a very plush aristocratic party. And he said to her, "Will you have an affair with me?" She looked at him with disgust, like, how could you assume that a woman of my stature, right, would stoop so low? She said, "Look, I didn't mean for free. Would you have an affair with me for $1 million? And she started to think. He said, "Now that we've established your morals, let's establish a price." Meaning that unless it's something that you could never consider doing, then basically that's what you are. Now the question is, how much is it going to take to be able to do that or not? Right? If you're a thief, it may take being alone in the room with a multimillionaire where nobody will know. Right? But if you're not a thief, that means that there's no situation that will bring you to do something that's wrong. That means total control. What Reb Simcha Zissel meant when he said that Darwin only formulated the theory of evolution because he never saw a real human being, he meant this idea. He meant a real human being means somebody who is not just quantitatively different than an animal, a more refined animal, but totally qualitatively different, meaning an animal, like we said, cannot change its stripes. It's born with instincts. You can temporarily train it to suppress those instincts, but eventually, as soon as the first mouse goes by and arouses those instincts, the animal's going to go according to its instincts. There are human beings who are like that. They're not... They haven't worked on their midos where they're in total control, which is the significant, fundamental, qualitative difference between an animal and a human being. That a human being can have that control. An animal can't. But if you don't have that control, then you're basically a refined animal. You also can be a waiter up until the first mouse passes by, and everybody has their mouse. So basically what Darwin saw were very refined people, but no different than a cat that was trained to be a waiter. They trained themselves to act refined until the mouse went by. But as soon as the first mouse went by, they all would go down on all four and revert to their basic instincts, their basic bad character traits. Reb Simcha Zissel was something that could not be an animal because he was in total control. And an animal can't do that. Had Darwin seen a human being with total control, he would have known that human beings and animals are two distinct, separate entities. One could not have come from the other. They're not just quantitatively different. They're qualitatively different. But if a human being is no different than an animal, just more refined, then it's possible that a more refined human being came from a less refined animal. That's what Reb Simcha Zissel meant, and it's exactly what he said. Didn't think that Darwin was unrefined. He just thought that he was no different than a cat that could be trained to be a waiter, up until, if it doesn't have control, up until the point that the mouse goes by. And that is exactly what Rabbeinu Yonah said. Just a little bit different explanation than we said before, but the same words. Lo yishkon ha-Torah la-olam. Not that the Torah can never reside, but the Torah will not forever reside in somebody who doesn't have Midos Tovos. Somebody without Midos Tovos can have the Torah. He can be a waiter in the guise of a cat. When will that fall apart? When the first mouse passes by. Whatever that mouse be, it be for that person. So the Torah will not reside forever in a person who doesn't have Midos Tovos. Not that it will never reside. It won't reside forever. It'll reside temporarily. But let the first mouse go by, that's the end. Forget about the Torah. Person gets down on all four, he's an animal. He's not a human being anymore. A human being means somebody who can be in total control. And that is a Talmud Chacham. A Talmud Chacham means a person who, through Torah, learns, is a student of the wisdom, and follows that wisdom in every circumstance. He's in total control. He's a Talmud of the Chachma. He just doesn't possess it, it possesses him. That is a Talmud Chacham. And a person like that can do sins, but he's in control. He has the control to do tshuva too. Because somebody who's not in control can do sins and have no, there's no guarantee he's going to do tshuva. He's not in control. But if you're in control, then a person who's in control can lose control. But if he still can regain that control, he's still basically in control, he'll do tshuva for sure. But a person who has no control, there's no guarantee he'll ever do tshuva. The Rambam says that a person has to do tshuva not only from actions, stealing and eating treif and whatever, but from the midos that lead to them. A person who steals, right, he has an action of a sin called stealing. But there's something that led him to that sin. His bad midah. He's a jealous person. He's not a satisfied person. There's midos rows that lead a person to steal. The midos rows are the cause of the sin. The sin is only a symptom of the bad midos. Go to a doctor and he observes the following symptoms. You have a cough. Your nose is running, and you have a fever. So the doctor says, for the fever, here's aspirin. It'll bring down your fever. For your sore throat, here are some throat lozenges. It'll soothe your throat. For your runny nose, here are some decongestants. It'll take away your congestion. You take these medicine. Are you cured? What has he given you? He's given you medicine that will deal with the symptoms, but it doesn't cure the disease. What will happen? For the next 2 hours, you'll look like you're cured. You won't be coughing. Your nose won't be running. The sore throat will have gone away, and your fever will have gone down. But if you have some kind of a virus or bacteria, right, some kind of infection, so within another hour, the symptoms will come back because the disease is still there. You still have the infection. Go to a second doctor. He says, I see from the symptoms that you have this and this infection. Here's antibiotics. It's going to take 10 days for the antibiotics to be effective. But at the end of the 10 days, your symptoms will go away, and they'll go away for good because I've cured the disease. It may take longer, but it's going to be more lasting because if you treat the symptoms and the disease is still there, the disease will bring back the symptoms. If you treat the disease, the symptoms will never come back. Noach was the doctor who treated the symptoms. He rebuked the people of his generation for stealing, for being immoral, and it worked for a while, till the next mouse came by. He didn't cure the cause, the bad mythos. He just trained them temporarily to act in a good way. And it may have worked temporarily, but it can't work forever. Because if you don't treat the cause, the symptoms will automatically come back if you're not in control. Avraham Avinu, on the other hand, taught his generation, the people who would listen, L'adas es Hashem v'laleches bedrachav, to know God's ways and to follow them. It means he taught them how to inculcate within themselves good midos. So he took away the disease, not just the symptoms. And therefore, had Noach done the same thing, he also would have been successful. But he wasn't successful because he treated the symptoms and not the disease. And therefore, since Noach didn't have the potential of being successful, because his whole approach was no good, he wasn't roy to have his family saved in his merit. He only got a present that they were saved. Avraham Avinu, on the other hand, was chosen to be the progenitor of the Jewish people who would receive the Torah, because it's impossible to receive the Torah without good midos. And therefore, Avraham was chosen not because he was a big tzaddik, not because he was a big Talmud Chacham in the classical sense, but the Torah says why he was chosen. Ki yedativ, because I know him well. Leman ashi yitzave es bonav es beso achrav. I know that he will command his household and his children after him. Lishmor derech Hashem, to guard the way of God. Velasos shloko mishpat, to do righteousness and justice. What's derech Hashem? Says the Rambam, midos. I know Avraham will teach his household, his children, midos tovos. Therefore, they'll be able to receive the Torah. Because I mean, ain't derech eretz, as ain't Torah. You can have the Torah, but only temporarily. Because the first mouse will obliterate it all if you're not in control. If you don't know the ways of God and how to observe them, meaning how to be in control. And that's why the Goyim were invalidated from receiving the Torah. What does it say? God offered the Torah to Esav. They said, what's in the Torah? God said, you can't murder. They said, well, we have a problem with that. Because we have a bracha from none the less than Yitzchak Avinu. Al char b'chatichya. We're supposed to live by the sword. So how can we accept the Torah? It says you can't murder. We're supposed to live by the sword. He left them, went to Yishmael. Yishmael said, same thing, what's in it? God said, says you can't steal. He says, can't steal? We have a bracha from an angel. Yodo b'kol v'yad kol bo. Our hands in everybody's pocket and their hands in our pocket. How can we have a Torah? It says not to steal. Left them. Came to Klal Yisrael, we said, Nasa v'nishma. We got the Torah. I don't understand. The Goyim didn't say no. They said they had a problem. Why didn't God explain to them why the problem's no problem? You have no problem receiving a Torah that says you can't murder. Because living by the sword is not a license to murder. Living by the sword means that you will get your parnasa, your livelihood, by being mercenaries, soldiers of fortune. You'll be hired out by people who want to fight wars. You'll be excellent soldiers, and people will hire you to be soldiers of fortune. That was what the bracha Yitzchak gave Esau. It's not murder. It's wartime. You're allowed to kill people in a war. So it's no problem. It's not murder, right? You're talking about wartime, being soldiers of fortune. Do you want the Torah? No contradiction, no conflict between Lo Sirtzach and what's it called? Achar v'chatichya. So God should have said to them, look, I hear the problem. It's not really a problem. This is why. Now, do you want to reconsider? Do you want the Torah? They never said no. They said we had a problem. Explain to them why it's not a problem, and then ask them if they want it or not. Why did God abruptly leave them so soon? Same thing with Yishmael. Yodo bakol v'yad kol bo does not mean that their hand is in everybody's pocket and everybody's hand in their pocket. The Targum says, what it means is that they will need the entire world, but the entire world will need them too. Till today, it didn't make any sense. They understood the Arabs needed the whole world. They were basically nomads who needed what all the world produced to be able to exist. They produced nothing of their own. They went from place to place. But today, you can understand how the whole world needs them, something called oil. So the whole world needs the Arabs, and the Arabs need the whole world for everything else. So, yodo kubakol yad kolbo. It's not a license to pickpocket. It's not a license to be a ganav. So why didn't God explain that to them? And then say, well, now that you understand that there's no conflict, do you want the Torah or not? Why did he abruptly leave them? So I was thinking one way you can answer that is the following. If somebody thinks that they have a license to murder, if somebody thinks they have a license to steal, that means that their behavior, their character traits are completely rotted. their basis of their character is decayed. So you can't get the Torah. There's nothing to talk about. People that think that they can murder and it's okay, then what kind of mitos is that? Somebody who thinks you can steal and it's okay, what kind of mitos is that? So God invalidated them not because of their question, but because the question, you can infer from that that these people have no mitos. And without mitos, the Torah will never be able to be received and remain. Right? It's only a matter of time till the first mouse goes by, and that's the end of it. So therefore, the Rabban Shem did not give the Torah to the nations of the world because of that. On the other hand, why were the Jewish people chosen? Because Avraham Avinu inculcated in his children and future generations, Derech Hashem, that we had the ability to emulate God's midos and to be in control. That's the difference. And that was the difference, basically, between Noach and Avraham Avinu. Noach didn't understand that it was the midos that differentiated between man and the animal, and that's what would make the difference if people are going to do tshuva, and Avraham understood that. Avraham, therefore, was successful in influencing his generation, and Noach was unsuccessful. He may have been successful temporarily, but he wasn't successful in the long term because he treated the symptoms and not the disease. And in my estimation, that I think is what this Sfarno means in why Noach was unsuccessful in influencing others and why his family was only saved as a gesture of benevolence by God and not in his merit. Thank you.